And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Awakening Podcast here on American Family Radio. It's my pleasure to be with you again today. God bless each and every one of you for your support for American Family Radio and the entire constellation of American Family Association groups and organizations, including my own, STAND, which is happily supported by American Family Association. They sponsor our dinner every year. And I am thankful to God for that association and thankful to God for the ministry of American Family Association, American Family Radio. As a matter of fact, I want to talk to you about that today because earlier this week, and it may still be going on, they began, started up again. Actually, I think they had already done this, but this might have been a continuation. But anyway, they're holding hearings on the Southern Poverty Law Center's apparent financing of racist groups like the Ku Klux Klan and Nazis and skinheads and all of that. The Southern Poverty Law Center is claiming that all they were doing was paying infiltrators, but it's quite clear that they went well beyond that because the number's up over $4 million spent promoting or strengthening, if you will, these organizations and what they were doing, while at the same time claiming to be pointing out any and every person, including us here at American Family Association, American Family Radio, and yours truly, E.W. Jackson, as hate persons and hate organizations. And thank God they're finally being held accountable and they're being indicted for having committed fraud against their own donors. Now, we'll see where all of this goes. The jury will have to decide whether the facts are there to convict these people. But I'll tell you one thing. They can certainly be convicted in the court of moral opinion because they're despicable. The fact that the Southern Poverty Law Center labeled the Family Research Council, American Family Association, and many of us as hate groups and people of hatred and put targets on our backs, really. Because, folks, I haven't talked about this before. You know about, of course, the Family Research Council. Guy walks up and, mainly inspired by what the Southern Poverty Law Center said, goes into the building. And I used to be a senior fellow for a Family Research Council, and I was in that building on many, many, many occasions. I was probably in that building a couple times a week. Staff meetings and other things that I would be going to. Guy walks in with a bunch of Chick-fil-A burgers or whatever he had. It was a ruse to try to get people to let their guard down, figuring, well, I'm from Chick-fil-A. I mean, you know, I must be one of you. But he actually bought a gun and intended to get into the offices and kill as many people as he could. He ended up shooting the security guard. I met the guy, by the way, who bravely met this man in the lobby and stopped him from going up and committing slaughter. He was inspired by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Now, this I haven't talked about, but of course, I get a lot of nasty communications and expressions, usually not to my face, of course. Occasionally, they happen that way when somebody can get close enough to me to do that, which is not easy, but it does. It has happened. But I also got a very serious threat, death threat that was investigated by the FBI. By Biden's FBI, by the way, and so nothing was ever done to the guy who issued the threat, who called my office and said that it was inevitable I needed to be shot. He said, it looks like that's what's going to have to happen. This guy turned out was a homosexual activist from Georgia, by the way, who issued the threat and was never prosecuted for it, and he should have been. But, of course, Biden, if it had been a conservative threatening some liberal, they'd have thrown the book at him. But of course, you know, little old me, what difference does it make me? Who knows? Maybe he'll even follow through and get it done. That's why I travel with security now, folks. I don't do it. For to tell you the truth, I don't like it. but I do it because my family and the Lord really spoke to me and said, you know, you have to take proper precautions. I had a situation happen one time. I was at an event. I won't tell you what event it was, but I'll tell you what, you would never have expected it. I was at an event, and I came out after speaking. I came out. I was being escorted, of course, and a woman, oh, I'd say 10 feet ahead of me, maybe 15, turned, smile real big. Oh, Bishop Jackson. Oh, you know, and basically turned toward me and, you know, just reached out her hand to shake my hand. And of course, you know, I'm by nature a friendly person. Okay, you got to really work hard to make me unfriendly, but I reached out and shook her hand. As soon as she got my hand, she tightened her grip and snarled at me and said, "Who do you think you are?" And I mean, it was, she flipped on a dime. She used that friendliness as a ruse to get close to me. And then, of course, they immediately, realizing what she had done, separated from me from her and whisked me off. I went to another event one time and I was reassured by the people. Oh, you don't even need security. They told you, nobody is going to. And it turned out at my table, I wasn't there at the time, some guy walks up and says to my assistant who was there, where's Bishop Jackson? He said, well, he's not here. Is he coming? We don't know. And he said, well, are you his son? Speaking to my senior travel assistant who's with me almost all the time. Some of you probably met him. And he said, well, I'm his spiritual son. And the guy just absolutely starts to go berserk. Yeah, you know, you tell him, yeah. And I happened not to be there. This place where I was reassured. Oh, you're not gonna have any problem here. Well, see, this stuff is spurred by a group like the Southern Poverty Law Center running around telling people, he's a hater, he's a bigot, he hates gay people, he, you know, telling people that you're a bad person, something needs to be done about you. And of course, we know the person who is the top target in the world right now is Donald Trump. But all of us who are on the front line speaking up about these issues, all of us are frankly targets. We're just a little bit smaller targets. Sometimes people think, well, maybe I get a smaller target now. Maybe I can graduate to a bigger one later. I mean, the Southern Poverty Law Center has pushed this stuff. Now we find out that they are paying the very organizations that deserve to be labeled as hate now, but they don't see, notice, they don't come into these Christian organizations because they're lying through their teeth. They hate what we represent, and they hate us. They're the haters. And so they label us, hoping, frankly, to put us in danger and hoping that somehow we will be either reputationally hurt or hurt financially or maybe even hurt physically. I'm glad they're finally being held accountable. But let me say something else. I want to walk you through a little bit of history. So this program is going to be a little different than, by the way, you know, all know I'm doing a truth tour. And this is very much on my mind, the degree to which the American people have been lied to and told things about our history which are simply categorically untrue. And the truth tour, my engagements have already started. I've gotten two engagements coming, one in South Carolina, one in North Carolina, one coming up in Colorado, one coming up in Mississippi, one coming up in Oklahoma. So I'm happy to come to your church, your community, and share this with you. It's going to be American History from a Biblical Point of View, but the title of this series is The Truth Tour, Untold Facts About American History, things that we haven't been told. Because, you see, people have used history as a polemic against our country to get our young people particularly, but anybody else they could persuade, to actually hate America, to delegitimize America, to marginalize America. To make people think that America's not worth defending. America needs fundamental transformation, or as Bernie Sanders and Graham Plattner and who was the other idiot on stage with them, whoever they were. It might have been, was it AOC? but you know, it's calling for a revolution. We need a revolution in America. Say, well, the way you get people to believe that is you persuade them that we're rotten from the core, from the very beginning. We are rotten as a country, and you can't correct us. We've got to be fundamentally transformed. The America as we know it's got to be done away with, and you got to replace it with something else. Their version of democracy, because see, for them, they were not a constitutional republic because they don't like the Constitution either, because they don't like limitations on government. They want to be able to do whatever they want to do. Here's the first point I want to make. This congressman, Raskin, Congressman Raskin from Maryland, gave this long opening speech. I guess he's the minority, senior minority, the ranking minority leader. The ranking minority leader on this. I think it's the Judiciary Committee that's having the hearings, but he gives this long speech about all the great work that the SPLC has done and how the SPLC fought the Ku Klux Klan and the SPLC did this and the SPLC did that. You know, this is a problem. And this is what the first point I want to make is, you know, folks, I respect the fact that there are people in the past who made tremendous sacrifice to fight what was truly evil. I respect that. I really do. I respect Dr. King. I respect some of the civil rights leaders who were dealing with just rank segregation and dehumanization of black people, with people who just irrational, demonic hatred of people because of the color of their skin. By the way, a third of during the whole lynching era, a third of the people lynched were white, who were simply trying to stand up against the forces of evil. I respect that. I have the utmost respect for it. And I have respect for all the people who did what they could to try to bring righteousness to the fore. That you simply don't treat other human beings this way. In England, it was Wilberforce. Here in America, it was the abolitionists, and then later Dr. King, and there were people like Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver and a number of others that I could name. And I respect them. I really do. I really do. Here's the problem. As they become effective in awakening the American people to the injustice of treating people differently because of their color, of the color of their skin, marginalizing them, dehumanizing them, depriving them of fundamental human dignity and rights, as the American people awaken to that, and the problem begins to recede and to recede and to recede and to recede until you get to a point where we are today that, folks, I dare say 90% plus of the American people could care less what the color of your skin is. Unless they're imbued with a bunch of leftists where they feel they have to somehow bow and scrape and apologize and bend over backwards and treat black people like they're handicapped or you know, dark-skinned people like there's something, you know, they need special help. Unless they're imbued with all that nonsense, they just want to treat everybody like human beings. They want to treat people the way they want to be treated, which is the golden rule, what Jesus told us, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. See, I really think racism as a significant phenomenon in America is over. Now, I know there are people who are going to cut my head off for saying that, but I just believe that it's over. Are there racists out there? Sure, there are, by the way, of all skin colors. Are there people out there who are just imbued with this irrational, wicked, evil deal about race? Of course there are, but folks, that's because of the human condition. It's because people are always looking for a reason, a justification to subjugate other people. And race just happens to be one of the excuses that appeals to them. But it could be something else. It could be their ancestral background. It could be their religion. You name it. They'll pick something. You've heard me say, if God were to wave his hand over the whole earth and made everybody exactly the same complexion and gave everybody exactly the same texture hair, and he left one difference, some green eyes, some blue eyes, some hazel eyes, some brown eyes, it wouldn't be long before you'd have the four warring tribes at each other. The green-eyed people saying, you know what, I'll tell you what, those brown-eyed people, they think they're superior to us. And they want to oppress us. They want to hold us down. We're going to teach them a lesson. I mean, look, folks, I don't know whether you've ever heard of this phenomenon. This is a real phenomenon. And this happened all over the world, just as slavery happened all over the world. It's called colorism. You ever heard of it? Colorism. Look it up. Colorism is the phenomenon that's happened throughout the world of people ascribing different qualities to people based upon their complexions. And by the way, this doesn't go to black and white or African and European. This happened within every culture. In other words, within a society, say in Europe, you had Northern Europeans who were more fair-skinned, Southern Europeans who had darker, swarthier skin, and the fair Europeans thought they were superior to the darker Europeans. It's called colorism. And it goes all the way back, they saw it all the way back in ancient Egypt, where darker skinned Egyptians were seen as inferior and lighter skinned Egyptians were seen as superior. Now, they weren't Europeans, but they were still practicing something called colorism, because somehow they associated in their minds, well, darkness is blindness. Darkness represents evil. Darkness represents what's bad. So the darker you are, the more they would describe to you these qualities that are attributable to darkness. And the lighter you are, the more they ascribe to you qualities of lightness. Now, this is just pagan nonsense. That's all it is. It's just pagan nonsense. But it has plagued humanity from time immemorial. Now, we are in 2026, and America, more in my view than any other nation on earth, has transcended colorism, racism, all of it. But here's the problem, folks. When you have an industry grow up and take root that allows you to make money, to get notoriety, to get in positions, to get jobs, to get elected to office, based upon the exploitation of and the mining of this concern that people have about race. Once you have an industry that does that, but the racism and colorism that had been addressed is no longer there, you gotta manufacture something to keep the industry going. That's what we're dealing with SPLC. And so while I respect people who really dealt with true, historic, major problems that were real and graphic and tangible, I have no respect for these race hustlers and pimps who are trying to somehow convince us, as I've heard people say even recently, things haven't changed since 1865. People say dumb stuff like that. But they don't say it because it's true or because I don't think they say it even because they're stupid enough to believe it's true. I think they say it because they want to convince others that it's true so that they can continue to exploit the issue. You all follow me. And that's what we're dealing with. If you had nobody in this country who was interested in promoting race as a way of advancing themselves, promoting themselves, making money. I mean, Al Sharpton, they say Al Sharpton got a budget of like $5, $6 million a year. Addressing the problem of racism. No, what he's really addressing is the problem of Al Sharpton wanting to find private planes and drive in the best cars and wear tailor-made clothes and you know, and get on TV as often as possible. That's what they're really addressing. And so the Southern Poverty Law Center, realizing, man, the Ku Klux Klan has been marginalized. Nobody wants to be bothered with that. Skinheads are a bunch of crazies. Nobody wants to be bothered with that. Nazis, I mean, nobody wants to be bothered with that. We got to somehow remind people that these are real problems. Oh, here's how we do it. Let's give them some money to help them become a real problem. I mean, we find out that this big event we had in my home state down in Charlotte, you know, the one where they could say Trump said that, you know, there are good people on both sides. And I understood perfectly what the man was saying. You know, everybody else has to say he's the Ku Klux Klan on one side is good. I mean, he wasn't saying that at all. He was saying there are good people who are standing up against defacing Confederate statues. By the way, I'm one of those people because I believe history ought to be an opportunity for us to learn, not something that we censor. Let's talk about that statue. Why is it there? I'll tell you something about that history that most people don't even know and haven't even thought of. Well, let me try to get back to that. But come to find out the SPLC financed some of those hate groups, true hate groups, to go to that thing and start trouble. So that they could say, you see, we the SPLC are here to save you from these terrible racists that we are financing, by the way. Don't tell anybody. Now, send us money. You know, these people have $800 million in assets. And folks, here I am bringing people together across racial and cultural lines saying it's not the skin, it's the sin. And we as Americans cannot be divided against each other on any basis, ideally, certainly not on that stupid and superficial basis, because Jesus said a kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation. I tell you what, though, I don't have $800 million in assets in my organization. Not yet. I'm believing God will get there, but not yet. Because I'm not exploiting anything. I'm trying to help save our country. I'm trying to help do what is right in the sight of God. I'm trying to help bring America back to our fundamental values. And here you got these people who are trying to rip us apart. But I'll tell you what, boy, they're doing it in luxury. Now, that's what's really going on here. And they need to be held accountable. That's why I have no respect for these so-called civil rights leaders and the Congressional Black Caucus. I just don't. I mean, I love them as human beings with the love of Jesus Christ because they need to be saved. But I have no respect for them or what they do. I mean, the stupid things that they say and that they promote, that they try to get people to buy into. I said this whole Carmelo Anthony trial, by the time you hear this, the trial may be over. I said, I hope this thing doesn't lead to riots because Carmelo Anthony, based on my understanding of the facts, as a retired attorney, someone who's practiced law and been in the courtroom defending criminal cases, in my view, Carmelo Anthony should go to jail. Because it's just black letter self-defense law. You can't stab somebody and kill them because they put their hand on your back to try to move you out of space they claimed you didn't belong in. Even if they were wrong, you can't kill them for it. But you see, the race hustlers will say, oh, Carmelo Anthony. Oh, see, Folks, it just proves we told you America's racist. We told you, there's no justice for the black man in America. Look, they're going to lock Carmelo Anthony up, and he was just defending himself against this white man who was trying to once again. I mean, that's the nonsense that you're going to hear in some circles. There's no doubt about it. Now, whether it ultimately leads to riots and mayhem, I hope not. I hope people will have better sense than that. But it wouldn't surprise me if it happened, because that's what race hustlers do. They don't have a real problem, so they got to create something. Now, all of that, believe it or not, was a prelude to something I want to say historically. I said I'm doing this truth tour. By the way, if you want me to come to your church organization, go to standamerica.us, standamerica.us, or email us at truthtour@standinc.net, truthtour@standinc.net, or call us at 757-375-6444, and I'll be happy to come and give one of these talks. Let me talk a little bit about the whole history here. Because again, a part of the problem and part of the reason why people buy into stuff like this, if I brought together a study group, an opinion group, what do they call them? You know, when you bring people together to try to get their opinions and get their views, and I, let's say 25 Americans of African ancestry, and I asked them, based upon just what they've heard, didn't give them any more facts, just what they've heard, do you think Carmelo Anthony was in the right? I guarantee you the majority of them, maybe 90% of them, would say yes. Because you see, they're taught to believe that the American criminal justice system is against the black man. And therefore, if Carmelo Anthony's being charged, then he must be in the right. I mean, just like what you saw with OJ. Well, they've gotten away with it. It's time we got away with it. I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff that people come up with. Let me give you a little bit of a history. This is the kind of thing I'm going to be talking about with the Truth Tour. I've often said, and I said in my book, if you've gotten it or read it, or by the way, there's an audio version of my book. It's not narrated by me. I wish it were, but it's not. But you know, slavery was not racial. Slavery was not racial. It became racial. Now, first of all, you've heard me say this before, so forgive me for repetition, but it needs to be repeated, and particularly for any Americans of African ancestry, they need to understand this. Slavery was not unique to America. It was a worldwide phenomenon. It happened on every continent, among every people on the face of the earth. It began primarily by conquest, where when people were conquered, some of those people who were not killed were enslaved. Sometimes women were placed into slavery as sexual objects, or as domestic workers or field workers. Men were used sometimes as soldiers, or again, field workers, or to do other menial tasks. But you were placed in slavery by your conquerors. The slave trade eventually evolved into an economic trade, because then people who weren't soldiers necessarily, but needed people to work for them, they could go and buy those slaves either from whatever empire or government or warlord or leader had control of those slaves. They could buy those slaves from that person. And then the enforcement of those slaves in slavery was done by that warlord or that person. I mean, so how it happened in Egypt. In Egypt, it just happened that a pharaoh arose that didn't like the Jews and just basically enslaved them because he had the power to do so. America is not unique. You know, the peculiar institution, it wasn't peculiar at all. It was a worldwide phenomenon. But here's, and you've heard me say this before, here's something you perhaps have never heard me say, but it needs to be said. Even in America, slavery was not racial, initially. Remember that, and I'm not, undoubtedly not going to have a chance to get into all this with you, but I hope I give you enough that you want to know more. You know, you hear the 1619 Project said America was started to perpetuate slavery. And I said, well, that's really strange, because the first settlers who came to the country obviously forgot to bring the object of the settlement, which is slaves. They didn't bring any. Well, that's really weird. They're going to the continent to start slavery, but they don't bring any slaves with them. And there were slaves in Great Britain at that time. Now, the slave trade was still fairly young, because it didn't really start until the end of the 1400s. But still, at that point, it's about 100 years old, but it wasn't at its zenith at that point. But there were slaves available. They didn't bring any with them. I wonder why. Could it be because that wasn't the reason for coming to the North American continent, the New World, as they then called it? Exactly. No, they came looking for freedom. They came looking for freedom of religion, freedom to build a different life for themselves, a better life for themselves. In the Jamestown settlement, some of them, they came for economic opportunity. The first Africans to arrive on this continent came here by accident on the White Lion that suffered damages in a storm and was looking for a port where they could repair their ship and maybe gain some supplies on to go on for the journey. I think they were headed for, if I'm not mistaken, I think they were headed for the West Indies. They weren't headed for America. And because they didn't have any money, they traded some of the purchased persons that they had on board, Africans that they had on board, they traded them into not slavery, but into indentured servitude in order to get the supplies that they needed to continue their journey. That's how the first Africans landed on this continent, by accident, because this is not where they were being brought. I'll tell you a story about Anthony Johnson, was one of them, but I'll get into that later. Here's my point. From 1619, when they first arrived, all the way to, I believe, 1677, if I'm not mistaken, you had two classes of people who were working in sort of a servant role, as opposed to just working. You had indentured servants who were serving for a time, generally a 7-year period. And you had slaves who were enslaved for a lifetime. Now, by the way, as that period unfolded, you had people who were indentured servants who were African, and people who were indentured servants who were European. And you had people who were lifetime slaves who were African, very few, and you had people who were lifetime slaves who were European. At that point, slavery was not defined by race. It was defined by a number of other things, legalities and all of that, but not by race, because you had, and by the way, by 1677 or thereabouts, 1676, those people who were lifetime slaves became lifetime slaves, because in Virginia the rule was passed that if your mother was a slave, then you were a slave for life. And that included Europeans as well as Africans. Now, most people don't know that, because they think, you know, the transatlantic slave trade, Africans, and only black people were slaves. That's not true. That is simply not true. Black people were indentured servants. Anthony Johnson was one of them. I don't have time to tell his story today, but I will during the truth tour. And Europeans were lifetime slaves. Now, when did that change? And by the way, this gives me an opportunity to say something else. You know, did you know that the concept That's why I don't like it, but I use it because I'm trying to come up with a better vocabulary, but for the time being, it'll have to do. But the concept of white people did not exist until it was created by the slave class in America, the slave-owning class, the slave masters in America. It wasn't invented by white people. It was invented by slave masters. And here's why. Here's what happened. Because in 1676, a man by the name of Nathaniel Bacon, who was himself a well-to-do landowner, had a conflict with Governor Barclay at the time over a number of things, over taxation, but primarily over protection from the natives, because he felt that Governor Barclay was not providing the fair share of protection that was needed by people like him. And Nathaniel Bacon apparently was a character. I'm not sure he's somebody to write home about, as a matter of fact, but he was a rough man. But he stirred up a rebellion, that's why they call it Bacon's Rebellion, stirred up a rebellion in which he recruited and organized white indentured servants, black indentured servants, white slaves, black slaves, workers. Basically, he crossed all color and economic lines and put together a rebellion that was just absolutely unreal. I mean, he burned down the Jamestown settlement. He was something else. And he ran Barclay out of his own home. I think he would have killed him. But ultimately, Nathaniel Bacon died. He wasn't killed. He died, I forget, of some malady that he contracted. The rebellion went on a little bit beyond him. But the slave owners learned something, which is when you have people, all of whom are in some way suffering economically, all of whom are oppressed, beware lest they come together across racial and cultural lines and create an uprising that you can't overcome. And that's when the so-called slave codes came into being. And that's when a great, big, uncrossable line was created between quote-unquote white people and black people. Because again, what I'm telling you is, when the Europeans began to come to this country, they didn't see themselves as white. They saw themselves as people who came from a particular region, from a particular tribe. So you were Celtic Irish, or you were Northern Irish, or you were Scotch Irish, or you were Northern Italian, or you were Southern Italian, or you were Dutch, or you identified either with your village or your family, or in very rare cases, with your nation. So British obviously had a very well-developed nation state, so they identified with Great Britain, they identified with England, the French did too, so they identified with France. But you had a lot of these groups, their countries were not really quite well-formed, and they identified primarily with where they came from. That tradition, of course, we saw it unfold in the early 19th century in America, where you had, we considered them all Italians, but they very much considered themselves Sicilian, Calabrese, you name it. Whatever area they were from, that was their identity, not white. And as I said before, the Northern Italians, who were lighter, look down on the Southern Italians, who were darker. They didn't see themselves as racially homogeneous in any way. That was an ideology imposed upon this nation by people who felt we've got to make sure that white people are always on our side to help us keep these slaves under control. Because look, folks, and this is so important. Do not forget this point. Slavery didn't help white people. It hurt them. Because it created a whole labor force with which the average white worker couldn't compete. And then you add to that that slave masters actually trained certain slaves to be skilled laborers, to be masons, to be carpenters, to be metal workers, to be blacksmiths. And now you've got workers who can't get that work because the slave master's got a slave who can do that work and undercut the price that a regular laborer would charge. Again, that's why West Virginia was started. The West Virginians didn't start West Virginia as a free state because they were abolitionists. They started West Virginia as a free state because they realized slavery undermined their ability to work and take care of their own families. So you got a system that is really undermining the ability to take care of themselves and their families, but you want people not to, rather than rebel against that system, you want them to go along with it. The way you do that is you create for them a fantasy, which is, well, you may not be doing that well. You may be having a hard time making ends meet. You may not be able to feed your family, but at least you're not one of them. You're way above them. They're way beneath you. So see, you got something to be really gratified about. You're white. Now, the average American of European ancestry did not benefit from that little bit of ideology at all, except psychologically to make them feel better about themselves. But it took root. It worked. But folks, even that wasn't a new phenomenon. And by the way, you know, I often think about this. Well, the British had practiced on the Irish long before they got to the Africans here in this country, because they had done the same thing with the Irish. The Irish are lazy. The Irish are, all they want to do is drink. All they want to do is have fun. They're intellectually inferior. They're hypersexual. I mean, all the stuff, all the caricatures that you could look back in history and find people would say about the black slave, the British had said about the Irish. I'm serious. It's not the skin, folks. That's not the issue. And so as Americans break free of that demonic ideology that somehow makes skin color the be-all and end-all of one's status and starts to see all human beings as made in the image and likeness of God, and all with gifts and talents and abilities that God has given us, and looking at a person not based on the color of their skin, but the content of their character, as Americans break free of that, all the people who have benefited from that have got to find a way to keep it going. And that's what we got going in our country right now. That's what the left is doing. That's what the Democrat Party is doing. They got to keep it going. But, you know, the Bible gives us a whole different standard, doesn't it? Acts 17:26, which I have posted, as you can see, above the window behind me. There it is. There. He has made from one blood every nation of men. And by the way, you know that word nation is not the word basileia or kingdom, which involves a governmental entity, but the word ethnos. He has made from one blood every ethnos, every ethnicity, every race, every color, every ancestral background, made from one nation, from one blood. We've all come from Adam and Eve. Every nation of men to dwell on all the face of the earth and determine their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings, that they might seek the Lord and grope for him so that they might find him. Now, that's why God created the United States of America, that we might seek the Lord. And that's why God determined our boundaries and our pre-appointed times. See, people are so busy looking at the flesh that they fail to see the spirit. I really believe this, that God used a whole variety of things in this sinful world to bring about something glorious that he wanted, which is the United States of America. He got the Irish through a potato famine, and he got the Italians through the pogroms and the poverty and the wars, and the Germans who were escaping all kinds of violent circumstances around them. And you just going from there. For every background. I mean, this nation is made up of people from pretty much every nation on earth. All coming here for a better life, all coming here for freedom, all coming here for economic opportunity, all coming wanting to be Americans, wanting to be a part of this new world, this great new place. And now people have basically poisoned that. Now you got people who want to come to try to destroy America. They want to come to try to prove that America's an evil place. They want to come to try to destroy America from within. And you got people in this country telling them and telling the world, oh yeah, America's really, it really is a terrible place. It really is a racist place. It really is a white supremacist place. It really, that's what the Southern Poverty Law Center is committed to doing. And don't pay any attention to those Christians talking about a providential nation and talking about one nation under God. Don't pay any attention to them. Those people are they're the real problem. They're the haters. They're the bigots. They're the bad ones. Folks, we're not going to save America unless we re-educate our people to know the truth. Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. That's what the Truth Tour is all about. You want to be a part of that. You want to have me come to your church, your organization, get in touch with us. Call us 757-375-6444. That's 757-375-6444. Email us at truthtour@standinc.net. That's truthtour@standinc.net. And in the meantime, folks, we're going to keep fighting to save this country. And we're going to win in the name of Jesus. So you know what to do. Isaiah 62 says, you that make mention of the Lord, do not keep silent and give him no rest until he makes Jerusalem a praise in the earth. Give him no rest until he makes America a praise in the earth. So stand up, step up, speak up, and refuse to back up. Because we cannot be defeated if we will not quit. Because we are on God's side. God bless everybody.